Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I have a fellow Arizona author with me. He is Joshua Dowadot. Joshua was raised in the outlying country areas of southeast Arizona. Being more prone to indulge in the outdoor lifestyle, he was constantly hiking and exploring the local areas up into his adult life. After high school, he pursued a career in the construction field before returning to school to eventually achieve a bachelor's degree in management with a concentration in green sustainability enterprises. And for several years, he has written ideas that he has either dreamed about or randomly imagined, different scenarios that explain something mysterious. Sometimes it's just the simplest eerie thought that he feels when something hits him just right. And over the years, he has worked on compiling these ideas into a hobby. And that hobby resulted in a larger manuscript. Today, we are going to get inside of that manuscript. It's his book titled Desert Shadows. So let's get going. Welcome to the network, Joshua.
Hi, Patricia. How you doing?
I'm good, and I'm happy to have you here. And I want to tell you, first of all, that the picture on your website of the Joshua tree did not go unnoticed by me.
Yeah, a lot of people like that one a lot. I had a lot of help with the publisher I used setting that webpage up, and it was a very very good picture. It has a nice eerie gloom to it, but also shows a good part of the Arizona landscape there.
Absolutely. Those Joshua trees, they do have that bit of that eerie feeling, but they're very cool. I have one in my front yard at my house at the base of the Superstition Mountains in Arizona, and I just thought, wow, how smart of Joshua to have a picture of a Joshua on his website.
Yeah, it kind of worked hand in hand.
I bet many people don't realize that, though.
Yeah, maybe not. You know, if they don't know what the cactus is. But, you know, for those who do, it's kind of one of those hidden things on the webpage.
I love that. I love when there are those little secret things that no one knows, or maybe a few people do. It's kind of cool. Well, we have Arizona in common, and when I initially visited your website, I was intrigued to read about some of the haunted places that I, too, have visited, like the Grand Hotel in Jerome, the Landmark Restaurant in Mesa, and I especially love the Copper Queen Hotel in Bisbee. I just really love Bisbee quite a bit. So why do you write about them?
Well, on the webpage altogether, to try to capture part of the mood that I tried to set with the book, I've concentrated on anything with an eerie feel, or not so much scary or horror, but just kind of the eerie little aspects of the world around us. So concentrating on hauntings, ghost sightings, stuff like that, obviously was generally drawing me in to write some blogs on it. Someone recommended me doing something around here because a lot of my fan base is here from friends and families, and expanding the book for the first initial time. Lots of the places I personally visited. So going from just haunted cemeteries, hospitals, stuff like that, that was very in general, then concentrating it on a whole segment of blogs for, I think, 2, maybe 3 months, that was just haunted places in Arizona, kind of just worked its way in there, and it was actually very fun because I could add so much personal experience in staying at those places or going and visit those. The Copper Queen, for example, several years back, me and my brother actually spent the night there, and so it really made it easier to write the blogs, but also adding that personal experience in there, something that you can't get from referencing books or websites or anything like that. It's something that I can apply personally, so it really appealed to me.
Absolutely, I get that. I get that you have to immerse yourself in the location or the place or the culture or whatever it is that you're writing about so that you can share that feeling that you can't get just by reading about it.
Yes, and then trying to write about it, of course, it's part of a growing experience altogether, because I can try to write those emotions, those feelings into the blogs, and it actually expands my approach on the other books that I'm writing right now, because I know I can apply that knowledge later on, how would I say it, those descriptions.
Right, you have some reality to draw from.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. All right, well, before we get into your book, Desert Shadows, why did you decide to write it?
I actually have a situation where I don't sleep a lot. When I do sleep, when I need to sleep and I'm tired, I definitely sleep. I will sleep 6 to 8 hours. But generally on most nights, I sleep 3 or 4 hours. It doesn't affect me during the day. It hasn't ever since I was about 11 years old. So to pass the time, I started writing old journal entries and trying to recapture my youth in a way, thinking about things that changed around where I used to live, stuff me and my brother used to play out in the desert in our imagination. Well, I had two different manuscripts going on, both of those. One was fantasy, one was reality. My computer crashed. I lost it all. So when I got my new computer back, I started compiling all back together and realized I was kind of putting them all together in one. Started seeming like a story to me. So I actually took them both and made them into a story where certain real aspects of us growing up out here were applied with things that we used to imagine. So I actually just added in a little bit of areas in there to kind of join it together and to expand it a little bit. And next thing I know, I was writing a novel. And a buddy of mine, someone I consider a younger brother, was up reading it one day. I accidentally left it on the computer. No one actually even knew I was doing this. And he was reading through it, and he said, "Hey, this is pretty good. What is this?" So I was like, kind of embarrassed, kind of not real sure what he thought. And I told him what it was, and he said, "You should take this somewhere." So I finished up a little bit on what I was working. And in the meantime, I also did some research on publishers, self-publishing, and I actually found a hybrid book publisher. And after doing some research, I took it to them, and next thing you know, we had a book.
You know, as you're telling the story, I'm thinking about when bad things happen, how good comes from them. So that computer crash, and bet at that moment you thought, oh no, you know, everything's gone. But it sounds like it caused you to put it together in a bit of a different format that turned into what it is today.
Yeah, I've never actually even thought about it that way. But yeah, regardless of all the frustration of losing everything and trying to restore it,
mm-hmm.
Something actually resulted out of it that I never thought.
Yeah,
I never once said, "Oh, I'm going to write a book," and there it is.
Yep, I think the organic journey is sometimes the best ones.
Yeah, and it's really. I think it's made it flow a lot easier as the way I pursued everything that I'm doing with it now, because it's not, even though I put my full heart into it and I put a lot of effort into it, it is a whole new learning experience, but I have not based everything off of it. So as it comes, it's very easy going to me because it's not something that I pushed more mm-hmm. in my life, I should say.
Well, right. It wasn't, there was no plan, and so you didn't have an outline and a plot and all of the, you know, spreadsheets and figuring out, all right, this character is going to do this, and it just came out of you and you put it together. So why don't you, instead of keeping us in suspense, tell us a bit about it. No spoilers, but just tell us a bit about the book, Desert Shadows.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, no spoilers. Mm-hmm. It's a story about two young boys growing up in the desert areas, of course, like I did, out in the country, loosely based off of a town that I lived in, where it was a small population and people were distant from each other, so there wasn't a lot of communication. If people lived far out, they pretty much stuck to themselves except for at school or when they went into town. The one main character of the story, which is actually told from his point of view, is Caleb. He's the younger brother. The two brothers, Caleb and Liam being, of course, the older brother, actually grow up in the desert, and as they're experiencing new things out there, they start running into people out in the desert away from their home. And of course, they have that those thoughts in their head. If can we trust these people? We don't know them. We're way out here. We're not by a house. So there's those common things that are already kind of sticking in with the kids' imaginations and how they feel about approaching any situation. As they progress throughout the story, of course, they have their regular type of life going on at the same time, but they're starting to get drawn into something that they're not sure of. So in order to kind of find some resolution to the situation that they find themselves unfortunately kind of getting pulled into against what they would really like, because all they really want to do is have a normal life, be accepted at school, have friends, but now something's even pulling them further away from that. They eventually, through investigating, find out that there's a lot more involved than they think with these people that they've been running into. There's actually a whole doorway, and it's not really actually a doorway. It's kind of explained differently in the story. It's more of a transitioning between two worlds. Mm-hmm. And they're actually slowly starting to open up into what many would consider, and many people that have read the book have described to me as the best way they put it, is almost another dimension where something's trying to come out into this world. So what they're actually imagining is actually the reality. So and then in their attempt to kind of control over this and further investigations into this world that they wind up calling the Shadow Zone, they wind up running into people in the area who know about it because they dealt with it. This is one of the areas where it opens up more. And as they slowly grow into this friendship with people that they never thought they'd be friends with, they just consistently pursue to find some type of resolution to this problem and prevent the bad people from ruining their lives, pretty much.
Wow. Interesting. So what genre would you classify the book?
Everybody asks me, and I say eerie.
You made your own genre, right?
Yeah, because I like the eerie feel. Not so much horror, but the violence of it. I just like that feeling of trying to describe when you look outside right before a monsoon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Notice at the Superstition Mountains. That kind of feel of that rapid temperature drop, that how bad is this going to be? Is this something? And I'm trying to capture that in the book. When I do classify it for book reviews and awards programs that I've entered it in, I do use usually young adult, dark fiction, dark fantasy, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you've ever spent a great deal of time, say, in the desert, talking about the Sonoran Desert,
yes.
And like I said, I live at the base of the Superstition Mountain, there is eerie. And it doesn't even have to be beyond, before a monsoon. There's just eerie, especially if you're open to that. So I get exactly the feeling, or exactly what it is that you're talking about. So we're going to start a new genre.
Yeah, it's that quietness, that exposure.
Yes.
That extreme heat and the
yes.
heat is in the background. You're just kind of wondering, like... What can see me way out here?
Exactly. I mean, you look at just fields and fields of these saguaro cactus that have been there for hundreds of years. Then you've got the thermals going on where you could see the heat and that you don't even know if maybe it's playing tricks on your mind. It's a very, very interesting scenario. So I have an appreciation for what it is that you're talking about. Now, when you talk about your characters, these two boys, are they loosely based on you and your brother?
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, of course, I changed the names around. The whole original book was just in our name.
Mm-hmm.
Once the characters started drifting away a little bit from being exactly based on us to being characters in general, I didn't want anybody saying, like, oh, well, you said you did this.
Uh-huh.
You know, and all those little things. It's like, no, it's a character. And it was like, oh, it's your name. And I was like, yeah, but we didn't, you know, that didn't really happen. Because I pulled aspects from our life and I changed them 50% to go into the story.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't exact telling the story. I didn't want people to read it and say, oh, this is about his life, you know, minus the fantasy part.
Right.
I was doing a little bit there to kind of cover up and kind of keep my personal life personal.
I get that. And I think readers who know you often tend to do that when they read something you wrote and try to extrapolate and think, oh, wow, so he must really think that, or he must be that way. So how was it, though, as you were realizing that these were now becoming characters in a novel and not just you and your brother, how was it when these characters started to take off and do these things or have these thoughts or feelings? How was that for you as the author, the writer?
It actually became, as I changed it and had to adjust some aspects of the characters, I also had to adjust some parts of the story so it would be adjusted. It was feasible. It was actually what someone would do. And as I started figuring out that after I started working with the hybrid publisher, Wheatmark, I actually started to realize what most people expect out of people that age, and I had to expand some of the characters' direction, and some places I had to pull it back in. Mm-hmm. So I did have to adjust the characters so it seemed more realistic, I guess, to someone who didn't know us.
Right.
So that became hard as writing it as if it was me, because I'm like, I wouldn't do this, but this is what people would probably think people this age would be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do keep a lot of the creative control. Actually, I keep all of it, but they do add that fit in where they want. They suggest you make these changes.
Right.
So as going from my character and having to adjust it out to this other character that's now quite a bit different from me, but is in the book and the other character, it was still fun because now I had something to actually work on instead of just doing it so openly and freely. I had to investigate how people act. I would go to the stores, I would go to the mall, places like that, and watch how people acted and apply this to the character.
Mm-hmm.
See their expressions from the outside so I could write it in the book as the character, as the character's traits, instead of how the character just sees everything for himself, how other people would see it as they're reading the book.
Right.
So developing the characters was very fun, and actually writing like a little separate area about all the characters' biographies. So I always had something to go back to and be like, well, this is the person who did this.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is how they're going to act to this part.
Right.
So in getting into the characters' heads individually was easy for the two main characters because, of course, it was loosely based off me and my brother. But getting into like the girls in this book that were made up, trying to think about how a girl would react at that age and how they would see things, that became a lot harder.
I would imagine. So here you are running around spying at the malls, and people are thinking, who is this guy? It's like, no, really, it's research for my book.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't like creepy bad or nothing.
I'm kidding. Oh my gosh. Because really, it sounds like then, you know, you did not set out to become a writer or an author. You were just, as I mentioned the word organic before, this just happened.
Yeah, and it's been nothing but it's been out a little over a year now, and it's been nothing but a learning experience
mm-hmm.
ever since. It's like, oh, you got to go do this. And then it's like, oh, okay. And I got to go find out how to do that and then work on it. So, yeah, just all these things that a lot of authors or people have written for a long time, a better portion of their life, or even some of them who just clicked with it right away. A lot of this was stuff that I had to kind of pull in and learn over the last year or so, and year and a half probably after I actually started working on the book to become a book.
Mm-hmm.
And, so it went from that organic trait to still organic because I'm still just doing it for fun.
Right.
And, but I am applying some of the knowledge I've learned now to try to enhance it and make it better and keep the audience satisfied. I am listening to what they say as well.
Mm-hmm. No, I think feedback is good, positive and negative, if you can accept that and try to look deep and think, okay, somebody's just not being negative. Let me take a look at that and see where the valid points to that are and how I can improve. And you are working on more books, yes?
Yes, actually, I have the second one is done because the original book for Desert Shadows was close to 175,000 words when I took it to the publisher. When they read through it, they wanted to we decided on targeted an audience 12 and older. So I actually cut that down to about 70,000 words.
Wow.
But I told them, this is actually already a shortened version. I already have like 450,000 words at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I already had like the second, possibly third, fourth book written.
Okay.
That was all just one story to me. Mm-hmm. So right over after this one got out there and started going and I worked for it on a while, I finally had time set aside and work, kind of put the second one together, the continuation. Because I'm a spoiler alert. there is a sequel.
Okay.
So now I'm working on trying to pull that together and where I want it to lead, but also trying to fill back in some of that stuff that I had to take out of the first one to shorten it up. So I'm trying to feed that back in the second one so the overall story still makes sense.
Right.
Without distorting it. So it does take away a little bit, again, once again, that organic aspect of it, because now I have to kind of critically think and figure out where I can fit this stuff in, where it just doesn't feel like I'm just pushing it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the story's like, well, why did he mention that? And then if it's a third book, fourth book, fifth book, whatever, later before the story ends, or before the story that I have so far ends, I should say, but people are like, oh, that's why that was there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, it has to make sense in that book.
Exactly.
So, the second one's ready, a lot of things have been put on hold just because of the first book expanding so much further than I thought it would. And I've been working with some producers in Hollywood on it, and we put together a treatment for it, which is like a shortened version of a screenplay. And after working with them, I went through the Amazon bestseller and got that achieved. And so there's a lot in the last year that took me away from pushing the second book so much further.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can only do so much, and you are in the midst of a learning curve, I would think. And but it's good that you've got so much written, because you've got a lot that you can pull from.
Yeah, it's actually, that's one thing everybody tells me, and it's true. It's because I'm not trying to fill in an empty void with just something random just to fill in. So it's actually, I'm trying to cut places out,
right,
and trying to make it more concise, but still readable and still detailed and still enjoyable to an audience.
Mm-hmm.
But having all this area to pull from, sometimes it does become overwhelming because I want to have it all in there. It's all relevant to me. So, but that's one of the nice things about working with editors. They'll tell you, because they're an outside source, they don't know you. They don't know you as your family. They don't know you as a friend. They don't know you how you grew up. I talk with them on the internet. They don't even know me personally as someone they talk to for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a total outside source that's viewing that and giving you their perspective if it makes sense. And that's something that I never really thought about before I moved into this, too. So there was, another learning curve. This is what someone else really thinks.
Well, yes, and hopefully they're the professionals. That's their job. They know what they're doing. And the whole key is edit, edit, edit. And, just cull it down to what needs to be said. And despite the fact that you want to put in all of the rest, maybe save some of those for blog posts or something like that,
Yeah, and it's been kind of pulling out of there. You'll see there's a, I think there's two more posts that will be going out of the Arizona Haunted Places.
Oh, good.
And then I wrap it up. And actually, the last one, I can tell you this. The last one is actually Lost Dutchman.
Oh.
So, and that was been something that over my lifetime, I've always been fascinated with, because Well, you know where that takes place.
Yes, I do.
Superstition Mountain.
Superstition Mountain, yes.
And
Jacob Waltz.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that's always especially in Arizona, if you don't know all those little secrets, all those little stories and myths about it, then it's like, do you really live here? But and that was a very hard one to do because there is so much.
There is
different approaches on the myth, who the Lost Dutchman was, all these little hints where it was buried treasure, was it a mine, was it just a vein of gold? And there's so many, and next thing I know, my blog's getting big, and I'm like, wow. So once again, I was in that same situation, like, try to make it more concise there. But yeah, so that was another part that kind of got put, that was actually one that got really pulled out of the book a little bit. In the first one, there's a mention of the Superstition Mountain and Desert Shadows. Okay. And so that just kind of, I had to pull out a lot of all that detail and backstory and kind of put it in more into the blog. So
yep.
Yeah, you're right. It worked right in there, and it was something that I already had the obtained knowledge, and boom, I can write a blog out really quick, and it makes it really interesting for people.
Exactly. Nothing goes to waste.
Yes.
Oh, I love this conversation. I'm excited for you because there's just so much more for you in the future.
Yeah.
So we've talked about your book and a little bit about your blog. Is there anything that we missed that you would like to talk about today?
You know, like I said, I worked with the hybrid book publisher, Wheatmark, and they were really great helping me develop a book that reached a different market. I can't believe that it actually sold overseas in several different countries. I've been thinking about, you know, trying to put it into different languages.
Yes.
I know that it's in, I believe, 5 or 6 ebook formats, and I know lots of those will translate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been really fun. The growing audience of people who contact me and read it or are reading my blogs is just like, wow, I never thought I'd be talking to these people. I never thought I'd be doing a radio interview about a book.
I'm excited.
So it's all just exciting. It's just a new experience. And now working with the production company in California, Voyage Media, and them telling me like, hey, you know, this is how we want to do it. And I'm like, okay. And, you know, and we redirect the focus a little bit for that to change up the book a little bit to make it more movie-oriented. And it's just been like, wow, transitioning back and forth day and night sometimes. But it's just been like 2 years ago when I was sitting there just doing it till I fell asleep at night just to pass the time, I would have never thought that I would be in this situation. Who knows what happens if if a production company picks it up. You know, fingers crossed, it'd be fun. Because it'll reach a whole different audience that way.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, it's just been, it's been a blast. It's been, it's turned into more of a hobby than it's something I truly enjoy doing. It's almost like my something that helps me relax and forget about the stresses of work, common problems in life. It's like, I'll go work on the book, I'll go work on the blog and escape a while.
Absolutely. It's very therapeutic, and you're putting out good work for other people to read. So it's a good thing. You're learning. It can't get any better than that.
Yes, I agree.
Yep. So where can folks go then to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your book, Desert Shadows?
The book can be found several places online. Primarily, most people have been using Amazon or Barnes & Noble. My website is always available, www.joshuadawadat.com. On there, it also has a link to several of the book websites that you can purchase the book from. And like I said, it's in 5 or 6 different ebook formats, Google Reads, Nook, Kindle. So yeah, it's available a lot of different places. All you have to pretty much do is, I think, type in Desert Shadows, Joshua Dawadat, or even sometimes just Desert Shadows in the search engine, and go to shopping, and it should pop up there with the mysterious figure on the front cover with the mountains in the background.
Excellent. I'm going to spell your name because that's the name of your website, joshuadawadat.com. Joshua, as you would spell it, Joshua, and the last name is Dowidat, Dowidat, joshuadowidat.com. Joshua, what an awesome conversation with you today about Arizona. It makes me want to get back out there.
It's getting warm.
I know. 104 yesterday, I think. Well, thank you so much for sharing you and your book, and good luck to you on your journey with this.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the interview here.